Hello and welcome to PHP Alive and Kicking, brought to you by PHP Architect and made better by our partners at Honey Badger. More about them later. This podcast explores the latest developments in PHP and what it's like to earn a living as a PHP developer today. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Page, better known as Mike Page Dev, and I'm a developer at PHP Architect and sometimes a lighting and sound technician. My co-host is a long-time contributor to our magazine and now a fellow team member, Chris Miller. Today we have a guest, as you may see. I did joke on the last show that you are one of the loudest voices in PHP, but I don't believe you've actually written any PHP. I might be wrong there, though. So why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay. I've written some PHP. I'm not like, you know, PHP is dead, Perl for life. Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Sarah Goldman. I have been using PHP since the late 90s. Not as much recently, yes, because I've not been doing as much web development. I've been doing more back-endy stuff, but I'm still definitely involved in PHP. I am a member of the PHP Foundation board. I was on the Oh my God, I've forgotten the name. This is embarrassing. The ones that make the PSRs.
Yes, them.
Oh my God, I can't
remember. How do we not remember that name?
What? Oh, shit. I'm going to be victim of gold for that one. Yeah, what is PHP? I don't know. I don't think I do it. And I don't think I have a loud voice. And I will shout you down if you tell me I do.
Point proven. So tell us
how. I just want to be heard, that's all.
We understand. I don't mean it in a mean way. It's an endearing way.
So leave that to me.
tell us how did you get into PHP?
Yeah, well, like I said, since the late 90s, one of my first real jobs out of almost going to school, but not quite, because things went kind of weird in my late teens, early 20s. But I wound up actually working for the U.S. government, of all things, under Clinton, I want to point out, not under anyone else. And this is political as I'll get. I was working for the U.S. courts in the Northern District of California, just doing, you know, tech support stuff. Because in the late 90s, you didn't have to be that smart to do tech support. You just had to make sure the computer's plugged in, reboot it once in a while, maybe update McAfee. I mean, I did a little more than that. I actually had a decent amount of network under my belt for stupid reasons. But then our department's programmer got promoted to the head of the department because the head of our department was in an unfortunate accident and, downers over there. So they're like, hey, you have some experience with programming, right? And I'm like, I know BASIC, and I took a couple of courses on C during the semester of community college I did. Sure, why not? So that got me into writing ASP, which was, one of the few web programming things you could do in those days. And like 6 months into that, my boss, who again was the previous programmer for the department, he's like, hey, why don't you check out this PHP thing? This looks pretty cool. And this was like 98. So like this was like 3.0.16 was the patch version at the time, but like it was early PHP. But the thing that made me fall in love with the language was actually the website. The documentation was incredible. Like from day one, PHP's documentation was second to none. And there was this little yellow JavaScript search box that would pop up when you hit on the search button. And I thought that was cool as hell. And turns out that was JavaScript and not PHP, but whatever. Fast forward 30 years and here we are. I got into IRC to kind of like rubber duck my own problems as I'm running into them, but also kind of help people with it. The other things, community stuff, BASIC 101. And somebody ended up asking how to like take a logarithm of an arbitrary base, which PHP had a function for base 10 and Napierian logarithms, but not arbitrary bases. And I'm like, well, that's just math, just log this and log that and divide and you're good. And I'm like, well, I want to do that natively. So I started digging into the source code and I'm like, oh, here's where this goes. And here's where all these others are, like how they're taking parameters. And I just kind of like worked it out from first principles. And I'm like, oh, hey, PHP dev list, would you like this patch? And they're like, yeah, sure, why not? Whatever. And then that encouraged me. And then I started doing some more stuff. And like two or three patches later, Derek's just like, just make an account. Just push your own stuff. I don't want to be approving your patches all the time. So, and that was all you really needed to do to contribute to PHP back then, was just be annoying a little bit. So yeah, here we are. Another 25 years after that.
You're still writing patches, aren't you?
From time to time. I haven't written as much lately because Facebook, who I was with from about 2010 to 2016, they had me working on HHVM, which you may know is kind of what pushed PHP to get better. I'm not saying Facebook deserves all the credit, but HHVM was like twice as fast as PHP 5. And PHP had to be like, oh, shit. Pardon my French. I don't know if this is an explicit podcast.
It's not now.
HHVM's eating our lunch. We better, loudest voice, we better step up our game. And so that's when Nikita did all the work that he did to make PHP 7 pretty awesome. And now twice as fast as PHP 5, in fact. And whereas HHVM, they're doing whatever they're doing. Where is that going with that? Last time I was really writing PHP on any regular basis. So like I ended up rewriting most of PHP's runtime in PHP because the way HHVM works, the JIT can compile PHP code on startup out of this what they call the system lib. And then because it's in JITted code, you don't have to trampoline between user space and internals, which makes it actually a little bit faster than the way PHP is doing it, where you constantly have to switch context, save registers, do a bunch of weird stuff. And so that was probably the last serious bit of PHP I wrote because I went to Mongo after that, and I was only working on the database server, which is just all C++. All the tests are written in JavaScript. The build stuff's written in Python. It's none of that's PHP. Although I would still sneak in a few scripts here and there. Sometimes you'd need, one off to, let's grab all these YAML files and reprocess them into something else. And what can I do that the fastest in? I can do that the fastest in PHP because you throw stuff at it and it sticks. But the last thing I wrote that went into PHP, well, that could go into PHP, is composable functions. Larry Garfield Krell, who introduced the pipe operator, and we'll probably talk about that later, he also wants this idea of composable functions where you can take a callable and just add it to another callable, and then maybe add that to another callable, and it'll create a chaining set of callables. So you could do something like, UC first less stir to lower less stir rev, and it'll pass a single string through all those functions. So there's a pull request sitting somewhere waiting to see what happens with that. He's working on the RFC because I don't want to write the RFC because that's really boring. So I'm still doing PHP stuff. I have two monthly meetings related to the foundation. So all of our active developers, there's a meeting on the last Monday of the month where we talk about what everyone's working on and what the plans for what's coming next are and that sort of thing. So I stay plugged into that. And then there's the board meeting on Tuesdays where we make decisions about what we want to do with future projects. And there's one coming up that I can't talk about yet, but I will, when I can talk about, we can talk about that in the after show.
Okay.
Well, talking about the foundation, for any listeners that don't know what the PHP Foundation is, why don't you just give us a bit of an overview?
Well, why don't you know about the PHP Foundation yet? PHP is building your career. No, sorry. The PHP Foundation was launched a few years ago. Roman Pronsky of JetBrains sort of led this effort. And the idea is it is an organization which helps fund the development of PHP. So PHP for, its almost 30-year history has been driven entirely by volunteers who use their spare time to make PHP better. And it's done very well for that. But there's been a couple of problems. One is just bus factor. Very often you have like a handful of people who are doing a lot of the work. And like Dmitry Stogov was doing a crap ton of the work. Nikita Popov was doing a crap ton of the work before he left to work on LLVM. And so you have this shrinking bus factor of people who really know all the interior bits and pieces really well. And so we need to increase that bus factor and make PHP more stable long term. We also just need people who are spending more of their time than just their free weekends or whatever making PHP better. You know, we need like serious attention on it. Or we don't need, but it would be really nice if we had serious concerted attention on that. So yeah, if you go to, I should have grabbed the URL first. It's on Open Collective. I will make sure to get the correct URL so that one of you can paste it in down here. Or maybe one of you can look that up while I'm talking. opencollective.something/PHP Foundation, something close to that. That will tell you not only how you can donate yourself, but like who else is making donations, who else is helping to support this. And so we actually have a decent budget. We pay several developers on a monthly basis for their time so that they don't have to be have a full-time job to pay the bills plus working on PHP. And I think as end users, you might have noticed the development of features has sped up over the past few years. And that's been a mixture of these paid developers plus, you know, we're still getting contributors. I mentioned Larry earlier. He's not being paid by the foundation. He's doing this stuff because he thinks it's really cool features and they're really useful for the language. So, and other people as well. I don't want to just pick on him, but he was the one whose name popped up.
No, I certainly think that the foundation has been a big turning point for the language. For someone that's come into the language a lot later than either of you, I've not seen the rough road that PHP had in the early days. I came in around 7.2, so I'm quite a late adopter. Well, I thought it was, but it's getting better. It's getting better. And this kind of what this show is about is trying to highlight where we're going with PHP and the fact that it is growing and it's getting better and better year on year. So yeah, I've certainly seen with the foundation there has been a real change in the pace of this, of how the language is developing. So we will add any links into the description. I don't know if Chris found the URL whilst we were talking there. But before we go any further, I think it's time for us to just have a little story from one of our partners.
Let me tell you a quick story about our sponsor, honeybadger.io. One time, a customer of theirs had a background job run overnight that caused hundreds of thousands of errors to be reported to HoneyBadger by mistake. Like many other error tracking and performance monitoring tools, HoneyBadger bills for monthly usage, and so this customer's mistake was going to cost them a lot of extra money that month. If you've ever used a monitoring service, you might have experienced something like this. Well, fortunately for this customer, they emailed HoneyBadger support and received the most amazing reply. HoneyBadger was resetting their monthly quota and canceling their bill. This is just one example of how much the small team at HoneyBadger cares about their users. Ask anyone you know and you'll hear similar stories. Go check them out at honeybadger.io. It's free to get started and setup takes less than 5 minutes. Don't forget to bookmark it. That's www.honeybadger.io.
Thank you, Honey Badger.
Thanks, Honey Badger.
Chris, where were you on Honey Badger?
I was watching it.
You were just watching.
Where's the thank you? Where's the appreciation?
We've not rehearsed that bit. We need more practice there. So, oh well.
It's all right. It's your second episode. We'll work on it.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Okay, so the main subject of this episode is the 8.5 release of PHP. And that is, do we have a release date for that yet?
That would have been a good question for me to think about, but it is on the wiki. And this is a good time to tell people where they can find out this information themselves. If you go to wiki.php.net, and I believe it's /PHP85 without underscores. Got it right off the bat. That will tell you the release dates for all of the upcoming alphas, betas, RCs, etc. Who's actually being the release manager for that release? Any votes related to, well, that's election votes. But according to this, GA is expected to be November 20th. And I know this process because, by the way, I've also been release manager a couple of times in the past few years. So I'm also active with that.
Okay, so not long now. Not long now till that one comes out. So
that's 2 months, yeah.
Yeah. So shall we delve into what's coming new in 8.5? What have we got? So we look forward to.
Should we start with my favorite one of them all? Let's have a look at Clone With.
Oh, Clone With, really? Okay. Yep. I mean, Clone With sounds pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. I put it in my S tier. I ranked all my features before this podcast. Yeah, Clone With. Obviously, you can clone objects today, mm-hmm. and that's awesome. But we have this sort of like new concept of like read-only properties, final properties, things that normally you would just set up in a constructor and never have to change any of these things. But that really doesn't mesh well with cloning, because usually when you're cloning something, it's because you want to modify something about the new object. You want some new attributes to that object. And even if you've got some factory method in your root class, that factory method can't just call clone and then modify, because it's now working on a different instance and it's already finalized. So what Clone With does is it gives you the ability to specify what parameters you want to, what properties you want to change and what you want their new values to be during the course of the cloning. So it sort of temporarily unfinalizes it and allows you to write to those properties really quick. So the calling convention for that is just using clone as a function. First parameter is the thing that you're cloning. And then the second parameter is just a dictionary. Property name equals value. Property name, value, property name, value. And then for pod classes in particular, this is a pretty straightforward and easy way to redefine a couple of properties in them. S tier feature, I think.
Yeah. And I can see uses for that with frameworks all over the place. Mm-hmm. It gives you the opportunity to have a single base that you clone and modify, but you're still keeping that restriction on read-only from that point onwards.
Yeah. No. Should I continue on to others?
Let's go for it. I mean,
the top of my S tier is the pipe operator. And that's probably why Larry was on my mind earlier, because this is another one that he championed. This was originally within the PHP space, introduced to HHVM. It is a pipe and then a greater than symbol. The idea of this is you can take whatever's on the left-hand side of that expression and pump it into the first argument of whatever's on the right-hand side of that expression, and then you can chain those. So it's kind of like object fluent calling, where you have, you know, object arrow method, but it's at a functional programming sort of level. So you're passing a value through a bunch of different function calls. Pretty similar to that function composition thing that I mentioned earlier, but more of a, in this moment, this is what we're doing sort of thing, rather than a, give me a closure that will do this thing over and over again sort of thing. So yeah, that one's coming. It is a little bit different than the way HHVM's implementation is. HHVM's implementation is technically a combination of a pipe operator and something called a PFA, which stands for, oh my goodness, I'm losing my head on the extension of these acronyms. Partial function application. Thank you. It's a partial function application. So what you can do is you can, in HHVM, specify that the output of the left-hand side goes into this magical variable just called $$, and you can fit that into the function call somewhere. So you can say something like implode, open pairing, a comma character, and then $$. So whatever came from the left-hand side is going to be dropped into the second argument in that case. So a little bit more versatile. I personally wanted that for PHP's version of it as well, but people didn't want extra symbols, and we decided that implementing partial function application as a separate feature at some point in the future would meld very well with this. And so we can get the same effect just using two separate features working together, instead of one feature that tries to do two things at once. And I have to pay attention to my insulin pump because it's telling me my blood sugar's too high. Sorry. So yeah, pipe operator. In my opinion, a pretty cool function. I used it a lot in writing a tool called fbshipit. It was a tool that we used for taking all of our internal source code at Facebook and making it open source. So like remapping directories and doing stuff like that. So you'd have like a whole bunch of transformation steps that you would run through on every single commit that you're moving from internal Mercurial to external Git. And I used it a few other places, but hopefully PHP devs will find it useful too. And the last thing for my S tier is the no discard attribute. So if you have a function that maybe returns like, you know, a status of whether it worked or not, you probably want the caller to care about whether it worked or not. So no discard will require all callers to do something with the variable. Now they could just put it and do something with the value. They could just toss it into a variable and forget about it. We don't try to guard against that, but they have to at least like think about the fact that there's a return value and make a conscious decision not to look at it. So this is a compile time enforcement thing. Do we want to dig into any of those further, or should I drop to A tier?
So question on no discard then, does that also include things that it throws?
Like exceptions?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really discard an exception. You can fail to catch it and it'll propagate through the stack until it reaches the top and then become an error. Well, technically you could discard an exception if you have it like in a catch and then do nothing with it. There's no way to guard against not doing something with an exception that you've caught. But in that case, you're effectively doing the same thing as dropping a status result into a variable and then not doing anything with that variable, right? I mean, you're making a conscious decision to discard what you've gotten back rather than an implied decision of just not doing anything with return value. So that's kind of the difference there.
And the use case I was thinking of was like, for example, if an ORM goes and fetches something from the database and it throws an error because the database isn't there. I've seen code on so many occasions where it's like, oh, but the database will always be there until the day it isn't. I've seen so many places where that's not handled. It's gone all the way through. By having something that could enforce you caught, that could give you serious strength.
Well, the question is, where should you be catching it? Should you be catching it directly at the call site? Should you be catching it several frames up where you said, build out this profile view? Should you be catching it all the way at the top where you say, well, your request just couldn't be handled? Without knowing where it should be caught?
True.
If we think of it from it has to be caught somewhere, but we don't care. Like it could go all the way to the top, then how is that different from an exception being promoted to a fatal error, which is what we have now?
True.
What would you do if you didn't do that?
I mean, for me, I will always handle, I will always handle exceptions at the point that they're being thrown. So if I've called a function that is in its own stack going to throw an exception, I expect to handle that at the point I've called that. Because I don't want it to go up the stack to an error handler most of the time.
Well, so you'll do that. So like, let's say you're saying like, go get user record number 12 from the API. That's the call you're making and you're ready to catch the exception that comes from that. The implementation of that might be saying like, oh, okay, they're looking for record 12 from the API. All right, I'm going to call this function that builds the query out of it. And then I'm going to pass that into the function that actually sends the query off, and then that function calls, fsoc open or file contents or whatever it calls. And then the networking stack underneath that is what actually throws the exception. So should the query be handling that exception and then rethrowing it? And then the thing that called the query handle that exception and rethrow it? Or should it just bubble all the way up to you because you're the one who knows how to deal with that exception? So
yeah.
We can't make a policy that just says the calling frame has to deal with it, because that doesn't always work.
Yeah, fair. It doesn't. Because you could have massively deep nested function calls.
And they could be completely appropriately deep. It doesn't have to be like a design problem. It can just be like, that is what makes sense for this. So.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes those stacks are 30, 40, 50 deep, which...
Oh, bless your heart. Only 50.
I was thinking of developers at the front end that deal with frameworks. I mean, it's interesting that we've got those three. I think we may have just lost your sound, Sarah.
All right, can you hear me now?
We can.
We can hear you, yes.
My headphone decided to just stop working, so we're going to put that away. And my laptop microphone is what defaulted in its place. I wasn't even using that. I was using my webcam microphone, so I had to tell it. So anyway, technical problems. Moving on.
All right. So for me, it's interesting. For me, it's interesting we've got those three in your S tier, and there's one in your A tier that I would have promoted.
So what I said to you when I sent this to you was, this is my personal take on it.
Yep.
I don't rank PHP on a daily basis. So, you know, other people are going to consider stuff in my EC tier to be S tier. So that's why we have lots of people working in PHP. Yep. So let's move on to that. I have three items here too. I've got asymmetric visibility for static properties. So we've already got asymmetric visibility. You can say public and then private get on a variable, on a property rather. Now that also works if the property happens to be static. That's it. Pretty minor change, but pretty important. Sometimes you want static properties that can only be set somewhere internal in the class, but you still want to be able to see what they are. So final property promotion. This goes with constructor property promotion. So you can say function construct public int $foo. And then whatever they pass for that first argument will just go into a public property called foo on the object and auto assign the thing. Now you can make those final, which you probably want to do for at least a few of them that are coming into your constructor like that. So that makes total sense. And then the third one I've got is fatal error backtraces. This is an INI setting. So there's underscores in between each of those words. And if you have that turned on and either there is an uncatchable error, and because some of them are just pure fatal, like there's no recovering from them, or if it's like an exception that's bubbled all the way to the top and you never caught it, there's no exception handler, no error handler, the default error output will have a complete backtrace attached to it so that you can, you know, figure out how that happened. It's I think probably most usable for the uncaught case, more so than the case where you have a default handler. Personally, I would just define the handlers so that I could get but for the uncatchable ones is because those can't go through the handlers. Yeah, sorry. I've been taking a lot of notes this morning. So Chris, which one was the one that you thought was the one that deserved to be an S tier?
Final property promotion.
Final property promotion. Okay, all right, yeah. I really liked property promotion when it came in. I thought that was a really cool feature. Mm-hmm. And final just makes sense to add to it. I think it was just the fact that it was kind of a natural evolution of the thing. Like somebody forgot to include final. So it's less, you know, game changing and more just like, oh yeah, by the way, let's make sure this works.
Yeah, and it just meant that there's a few times where I was having to not use property promotion because I'd got finals. And
so it'll be game changing for you.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, that's A tier. We can move on to B tier. There's a lot of features in every new release of PHP these days. Thank you, Foundation, for hiring people to work on this on a regular basis. I think the biggest one is that opcache is now just always built into PHP. It has no dependencies. There's not a good reason why it shouldn't be built into PHP. When we first added it to the tree, which was in 5.something, I want to say 5.2, maybe 5.3, we didn't have it building automatically because it was still kind of experimental at that point. But here we are in 8.5. We're pretty confident that opcache works and does what it says on the tin. So let's just always make it there. You can no longer disable it from builds. However, you can disable it at runtime. So you can say, I don't actually want to cache because I hate the planet and I want to burn extra CPU cycles and watts. And no, there's valid reasons to turn off the cache. So I think that's pretty cool. Then you always know it's going to be available. The override attribute, this is saying, so if you have a method in a child class that you're like, this overrides something in the parent, and I want to make sure that if the parent's API changes, I'm not going to be surprised by it. So I'm going to say like, okay, here is my do query method or whatever. And this definitely should be overriding something in the parent. You throw the override attribute onto that method And then at compile time, if the parent that you're inheriting from doesn't have a doQuery method, it's going to raise an error and let you know. C++ has this. It's literally just called override as a keyword. Or final is just override in a final form. And it means that the parent has to exist and actually specifically has to be defined as a virtual, because not every function in C++ is overridable, but that's not salient to PHP. Yeah, const expressions. So if you have an expression that exists somewhere inside of a context that, according to the compiler, must be const defined, and this is not something that's really a user space aware thing, but something like function foo takes parameter callable $x, and the default value of that, so we've got an equal there, is, you know, some callable function. You know, we could do something like in quotes, strcalower. That's the default function. And in quotes, it's going to work fine, because a string that contains the name of a function is still a callable. But we can't do like a first class callable where we say strcalower open parens ... close parens, because that is too dynamic of a function. Well, not anymore. Now that can exist in static consty expressions as well as regular closures. So you can do, you know, function without a name X, braces, things like that to return values. So mostly this means you can have default callbacks for your function decorations. You don't have to do something like nullable callable equals null, and then check if it's null, then we set it to something else, which is probably what people are doing today. So those are going to work in 8.5. You can also now put attributes onto constants. You know, we can have them on functions and parameters and classes and everywhere else. Now they can exist on global constants and class constants as well. So it's one more place for attributes to exist. The array first and array last functions, I was surprised to learn these don't exist yet. You know, you can for each through an array, you can get array key at some index, but there's nothing to just say, what is the first value in this array? Or what is the last value in this array? Which seem like pretty common tasks. And in fact, we have the functions array key first and array key last, but not for values. So we have those now. Yeah.
So that must be something that Laravel have implemented, because I'm sure I've used a first on arrays. It must be a framework implementation.
I mean, it could be what it's doing is it's getting the first key and then using that to dereference the array to get the value. So, you know, one less step. Yay.
And I'm just surprised we didn't have them.
Yeah, I'm the same. It must be a helper in Laravel then, because I think I've used something similar.
Because it's not a hard thing to do. Like, even before the array key first and array key last functions existed, you could do something like reset array and then get an each out of it to get the value, or you know, last array or rewind array or whatever. These are old PHP 3 functions. They've existed for a long time. So you always could do it. It's just how much pain it is kind of depends on what version you're on. Sorry. But yeah, going back, this is kind of a minor thing. I put it in the B tier just because it potentially might surprise somebody. The directory class, I don't even know how many people use this. It's not something I ever use. But it is sort of in a category of things that used to really only exist from functional calls, but now there's a concrete definition for it. You're supposed to create a directory using the dir function and it'll return an instance of the directory class. But technically, you could new that directly. And it's going to give you a class that doesn't really have a consistent internal structure to it, which is probably a bad thing. So now you just can't directly instantiate it. So if you've been trying to do that, sorry. But why are you trying to do that? I don't understand. Chips. Everybody likes chips. Little dip. Cookies having independent and partitioned state. I had to write that one down. I'm not going to try to explain what this means because I don't know what a partitioned cookie is. But if you like partitioning cookies, you can do that now. It basically just means adding partitioned true to the set of options on set cookie or set raw cookie. And apparently it has to come with secure equals true as well. So I encourage you to find the RFC for that standard if you want to know more about that. And then the last thing we've got for B tier, configure URI parser for filter validate URL. There were a bunch of improvements to the filter extension made in 8.4. This was on the RFC from 8.4. It just never got actually implemented. Oops. It's implemented now. So Have fun.
See, that one is one that is seriously useful in web applications. The number of times people will throw things...
The dollar euro?
Yeah. You can throw things into a text box and people will just accept it and go, ah, it's fine, it's a URL text box. We told them it was a URL. Yeah.
Well, so the input filtering extension has been able to do this all along. So you'll say, like, filter get var foo and apply URL filtering on it. Like, that's existed since 5.something. This is for the URI parser, which is using a lot of the same bits and pieces of it. But it's a separate piece. So if you wind up, let's say, accepting a URL as a parameter, it parses as a URL fine, but then one of the arguments in that URL has to be a URL itself, because Yodog or you like URLs. That's where URI parsing comes in. So yeah. All right, then C tier. Grapheme aware Levenshtein distance. You ever used Levenshtein functions in PHP? Did you know there's a Levenshtein function in PHP? Tells you how similar two words are in just in their spelling. That's it. So like color versus color. It would tell you a Levenshtein distance of one because we spell it differently. Now that is grapheme aware. So if you have compositions of components of letters or ideographs rather that end up being the same thing. It's like you might in Unicode have, Latin lowercase e and a combining acute diuretic. That is the same thing as the single character e with combining acute diuretic. Diuretic? No, diacritic. A diuretic's a different thing. Sorry, kids. So it will tell you now that those two e's with an accent on them are the same letter, in fact. So, but that is a new function. So that is now grapheme underscore Levenshtein because it exists within the Intel extension and grapheme is one of Intel's prefixes. We've also got get error handler and get exception handler. These will just return you the callables that would be invoked if an uncaught error or uncaught exception were to happen. I don't know what the use case is for that is personally, but I'm sure somebody does. Maybe they want to mock errors during testing. Maybe they just want to know that one has been set. So there you go. Have fun with that, I guess. Delayed target validation. This is an attribute. So, hash, square bracket, delayed attribute. Delayed target validation, rather. This is kind of an affectation that we came up with for stuff like the override attribute and other things that have been introduced since 8.0, like attributes that exist only in newer versions, but not older ones, but we want our code to still work correctly. We can say delay the validation of this target until runtime rather than a compile time. So we have a chance to load in our polyfills and make sure that we have something defining that attribute. I'm not sure why we don't have that enabled all the time, except for just efficiency sake, because a compile time one only has to be done once, but a runtime one has to potentially be done every time it's run. But this is just meant to make it easier to have a path for forward compatibility. So you can introduce stuff into the engine in 8.5 or 8.6 and still be able to write into your code going to run on 8.1 or 8.2 or 5.1 if you're still running 5.1. Don't be running 5.1 or I'll come for you. So filter throw on failure is an extra flag that you can pass to the input filtering functions. It just means throw an exception instead of returning null. That one seems pretty smart to me. I don't know why I put it in C tier. That's actually kind of A tier, possibly S tier, because exceptions are the way. And then
Do you know what it's throwing?
Do I know what it throws?
Yeah.
I believe it throws a value exception, but I would have to double check that. Value exception makes the most sense to me, but I could be wrong.
This kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Well, good news. You can go to wiki.php.net/RFC, and you can find all of the RFCs that have been written for every version of PHP since 5.something. And you can read what it throws, why it throws it, and depending on the RFC author, who complained about the fact that it throws that instead of something else. So we're entirely open. Have fun with that. So the last thing I have on my list is persistent curl share handles. Share handles are basically where you put stuff like your cookie jar for multiple requests. Those can now exist persistently between connections. And we made a decision kind of in the process where we're going to decide what that persistency handle is for you, unless you really want to override it. I'm not sure what the overall value is in persistent share handles. I guess maybe you might want to have like, it might be expensive to do an authentication and that authentication sticks into a cookie somewhere and you don't have to re-authenticate your API, but I don't know. If you need persistent share handles in curl, good news, here you go. They're around. And then everything else is the D tier, which is stands for deprecation. It doesn't actually mean these are not important, but they are the usual, every minor version, we have a deprecation list. Nikki sort of created this tradition. It's a great tradition. It gets PHP to clean up after itself. We can go through the list as well. There is a deprecation RFC listed from the wiki. The thing is that RFC mostly covers 8.4 deprecations for reasons that I'm not entirely sure. So I actually had to go to the news file in the source tree. By the way, the PHP source tree has a news file, all caps, right at the base of the URL. And that will tell you every single change, whether it was a new feature or a deprecation or a fix or whatever, all that stuff that goes in the change log. You can read that at any time. So starting at the top, from I think was my most important, redeclaration constants is now deprecated. I don't know who doesn't know this, but the define function allows you to change a constant's value for global constants, which seems insane to me, but WordPress depends on it, or at least did for a while. We pointed that out to them when I was working on HHVM, actually. I was testing WordPress with HHVM, found out it didn't work for, among other reasons, the fact that it wanted to redefine constants. So I first had to implement constant redefinition in HHVM and then tell them, hey, by the way, do you have to do this? Is it really important? And they're like, no, it's actually not that important that we do that. So they may not require it anymore. Might be something to check. This was a long time ago. 13 years, 15, something like that. I'm old.
I'm amazed that was even allowed.
Redefining constants? Yeah.
The whole point of a constant is that it's constant.
It's a bit unhinged, isn't it? Yeah. So we're deprecating that. It's expected to be an error in PHP 9 is the currently agreed timeline. If this, you know, breaks your spacebar heating workflow, then, you know, love to hear from you. Incrementing non-numeric strings. I'm sad to see this one go because this is one of the lulls that I always like going to. It's something we inherited from Perl. If you have a text string, let's say it's ABC lowercase, mm-hmm. and you do a post increment on that, what do you think that does? Chris? I'm doing the eyebrows.
I actually can't remember what it did, but didn't it actually give you the next letter in most cases?
Yep. From a right to left standpoint, so you would have ABD. And if you got all the way up to Z, or Z if you prefer, it'll give you ACA, because the you know, carry the Z to the 26th yep. place. Mm-hmm. And yeah. It's something that Perl did, so PHP did it too. There was no matching decrement ever. You can decrement a string, it'll do nothing. So we're finally actually deprecating that in PHP because it's kind of it's kind of a surprising feature that you don't expect, especially given that it's non-symmetric. I probably have a few scripts that actually depend on that because for whatever reason, I actually do need that behavior, but I'll deal with it. It's fine. I didn't actually vote on that one. I just sort of harumphed at it. Another one that I think might catch people by surprise is the HTTP underscore response underscore header local variable. So if you F open an HTTP or HTTPS URL using PHP stream wrappers, it will take all of the headers that the remote sent back and it'll just shove them into a magical array that appears out of nowhere as an HTTP response header variable or headers. I can't remember if that was pluralized or not. And for me, this was always useful for when the request failed, you know, 404 or 403 or whatever, you can find out why it failed and how it failed and record that. We have ways to get at that information that don't require magic variables anymore. So we're trying to encourage people to use those. We've had those new ways for a while. And making variables magically appear is not great for jitting. So we're just trying to kind of get that out of the way, along with everything else. Oh, and the backtick operator. You ever use the backtick operator in, or I guess it's a quote technically. So I'll pick on Mike this time. Mike, what does the backtick do in PHP scripts?
I don't know because I've never used it.
Okay, good. Chris, do you...
I've used it, but it was like 5 years ago.
Okay. Well, and this is one of the reasons we're deprecating it, because people don't tend to know it exists and maybe don't even know how to look up what it does. Although I'm pretty sure you can type php.net/backtick and find out. Maybe test that.
Only if you know it's called a backtick.
Oh, yeah. The backtick, that's the number on a US keyboard that's right underneath the tilde at the top left corner of the keyboard, if anyone is uncertain. So yeah, the backtick operator works the same way it does in bash, actually. It just says, execute this string on the command line. It supports the same interpolation as double-quoted strings, so you can put variables into there. It is essentially a alias for the shell exec function. And by essentially, I mean literally when you compile, it sees backticks and it says, call the shell exec function. Like, it doesn't even retain knowledge that it used to be backticks. So if you're using backticks anywhere, just replace it with a call the shell exec. It'll have zero impact on performance. It'll improve readability. Just, you don't need backticks. Oh, and then this one, I didn't know existed. I'm always excited when I find one that I didn't even know existed, because there's lots of stuff in PHP that surprises me, but I don't get to them often.
This one feels like a syntax error.
It does, doesn't it? I'm sorry, Chris is reading ahead because he has my list. Terminating case values with a semicolon. So you already know you can, in a switch statement, you have like switch $foo, case 123, case, you know, some constant, case this. And you always end those with colons, right? Case 123 colon. That's how you define a case, right? You could also use a semicolon if you want. We don't need a whole colon. That's wasting half a colon, right? Yeah, I had no idea this worked. I immediately jumped to 3v4l.org to verify that it works, and it does. And that surprised the hell out of me. So we are getting rid of that alternative syntax, because don't write your code that way, please.
How many PHP stan errors do you think people are going to get with this one from typos?
Well, that's a good question, because I don't know if PHP stan covers this or you know, any other, you know, code linting tool. Because what I imagine is the first time they encounter it, somebody reports a bug and it says, the semicolon is perfectly valid here. I want to use it. Like, spacebar heating works for me. Just give it to me. And the maintainers are like, well, if it's in the grammar, I guess I'm going to support it. So errors is my guess.
So at the moment, they're going to get no errors because it's valid code. Yeah. We're deprecating that. So what's going to happen next? You're going to end up with people who've mistyped it, not knowing they've mistyped it, that have had it on production for 10 years.
And they're going to be like, how does this work? I don't understand.
I've got a feeling PHP Storm starts shouting at you if you use a semicolon. Because I think I'd done it myself when I was learning about switch statements. I think I did it by mistake. Sort of because you're so used to hit semicolon at the end of everything.
Because semicolons go at the end of lines, obviously, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure I've done that, and it's come up and said, no, it's a colon, not a semicolon, and changed it, if I remember right.
Entirely possible. I don't tell Roman, I've never actually used PHP Storm. I like Vim. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway. The rest of these start to get boring. That was the last of the fun ones, but I was really looking forward to that one. Array object and an array iterator with objects. Honestly, that sounded so boring, I didn't even look up what it was. But I imagine it's something to do with passing an object into the constructor and then iterating the properties in them, probably. Just put an array cast, if that's the case.
Thing as what collections did in the first place when Laravel first implemented them. Collections were a class, but they were also array iterator.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just treat them as an array.
That's what array object does, actually. It gives you something that behaves like an object or an array. That's its general purpose. But like how you populate what goes into that, I think, is what's changing. But read the RFC. See, I'm giving you homework. Class, your homework for today is to go to wiki.php.net/RFC and figure out how this works, because Sarah couldn't be bothered to do the research for this episode. Yeah. So passing values pass to the CHR function. CHR takes a byte, right? It takes a value between 0 and 255, obviously, to produce one ASCII character. Because ASCII is good enough for anybody, right? I have to exert my American imperialism before I move. By the way, I'm moving to Portugal in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to have to figure out how to deal with other character sets. Anyway, currently, or in older versions, CHR will take bigger values. And I think what it'll do is that it will quietly modulo that 256 and just take the bottom 8 bits and tell you that's what that character would be, which is a little unhinged. So now it's going to actually give you an error or an exception or something like that. If you
can't see that causing problems in programs.
No, that would never cause a problem. Why would it? That's insane. Speaking of, we have non-canonical cast names. So you can do something like parentheses around int or float or bool, and that'll cast to those types, right? Did you know? You can put parentheses around the full word boolean and integer and double. No, is it double? Yeah, I think it's double instead of float. There's a bunch of other cast types that you can do, and it'll still cast it to that type. This unfortunately ends up reserving a whole bunch of words out of the grammar for PHP, so nobody can like define an integer class, for example, because of this. Or, well, they couldn't until we had context-sensitive parsing. But this is just cleaning up stuff that there's too many ways to do some things, and it's okay to get rid of some of the ways to do some of these things. Did either of you know there used to be an unset cast? So open paren, unset, close paren.
No.
It only does something meaningful if you do it on a dollar variable, but if you say unset cast a dollar variable, it will turn that variable's value into null, which is not quite the same as unsetting it, but you know, we got rid of that several versions ago because it didn't make a lot of sense.
But why would you ever do that? It would be quicker to do variable equals null.
Ask Rasmus. Make him explain himself. And in the final edit, you can just put a little picture of Rasmus looking sad up here. I have that picture if you want it. So yeah, the exclude disabled parameter for the get defined functions function call deprecated. I don't know why you would deprecate that. Sometimes wouldn't you want to disable? Well, who knows? Returning null from a debug info implementation on a class, you can define an underscore underscore debug info function. If you return null from that, I think it does the default behavior instead of whatever you return. But you can always just cast the array to the object to an array, so it's the same difference. Implementations of RFC 7231 date formats. There's a global constant and a datetime interface constant for that now. Intel error level, INI setting. Oh, sorry. There is not that format anymore. I should have said backwards. The Intel error level INI setting is now gone. You cannot set that as a global anymore. And I think the main motivation there is that it didn't always work the way you thought it did. And so it was kind of false advertising. The URI DSN for PDO is gone because, well, is deprecated because it's basically a security hole waiting to happen. And PHP gives users enough foot guns as it is. So let's maybe hide that particular foot gun. And then we just got a bunch of function deprecations. Finfo close, the context param to finfo buffer, image destroy, socket set timeout, XML parser free, and all of the set accessible methods on the reflection classes. Most of those because they don't do the things you think they're going to do anymore. Some because of this process we have where we're changing the resource type to be objects that still behave the same way because we're getting rid of the resource type eventually, maybe 9, maybe 10, PHP 10, who knows. And then set accessible just straight up doesn't work anymore. We've changed accessibility so much that you can't, it doesn't make sense any longer to just say, make that property public. It's fine. Just trust me. It's public now. We just are not supporting that anymore. So that's it. That's deprecation tier or D tier. There are no F tiers because PHP itself is S tier, which automatically erases all F tiers. And yeah, PHP 8.5. Let's go.
Looking like it's going to be a very good release. There's a lot.
Oh, they're all good releases. Matt, Mike, you were talking about not having a lot of insight into, you know, the old days, and I kind of took this implied the bad old days. I think it's really tempting to look back 5, 10 years in anything and say like, oh, it was terrible then, so much better now. But the thing is, at the time, you know, PHP 5.6, we weren't thinking, oh, this is terrible. We were thinking like, man, this is the best PHP has ever been. It's freaking awesome. This is so much better than the bad old PHP 4 days. And when PHP 4 was out, we weren't thinking it was terrible. We think, oh, this is so awesome. It's so much better than the bad old PHP 3 days. So like, it's, you know, be context aware, you know, PHP is awesome. It's going to get more awesome. Someday we'll look up back on 8.5 and think, God, what were you thinking? This was a terrible release. So embarrassing, but it's not.
I've heard the stories, and I suppose some of what we're trying to do, especially with this show, is maybe hopefully turn those people around that looked at PHP and has a bit of a bad taste in the mouth from earlier days. As I say, I was lucky enough to come in where it seemed so logical, easy. It is easy to learn, which I found very helpful, and it is used in the majority of the internet, and we're trying to explain to people in a more positive way that PHP is still here and it is growing and it's improving. So yes, every time, every release, and at the moment we're having yearly releases, so every year we're growing on the previous year. So yeah, it's brilliant, and thank you very much for that really detailed talk through what's coming, what we can expect in November. So really looking forward to some of that. So just to move on from there, apart from what you've already talked about in the upcoming release, what would you say are the really sort of exciting things that are happening in the PHP world, community, and the language for you at the moment?
Well, for me personally, it's mostly foundation business, honestly. Like I said, we do have a couple of projects coming up that are going to be announced. They're not there yet. I'm still trying to get us into a point where we can reliably have public versions of our minutes to just put into GitHub. And we do publish versions of them. I want to get them a little more public. Ideally, I'd like our Zoom meetings to just be live streams. But there are complications with that. Sometimes we talk about stuff that is, for the necessity of protecting confidentiality of people, sometimes that just can't be public. You know, there's a lot of valid reasons to have closed doors sometimes, but I'd like those doors to be as open as possible. So that's something that I'm still working on. Sorry, I've been trying to work on it a little harder. And now I'm trying to think what I can actually talk about that we have coming up, unfortunately. There's one thing that'll be announced pretty soon, very soon. No, it doesn't make sense for me to think about it because if it's not published on GitHub already, then I probably shouldn't be talking about it. So you can check out github.com/, I think our org name is the PHPF, but we'll get that in the show notes.
Yep, we'll get that in the show notes.
Yeah, and we'll see what comes next. One thing about the foundation I did want to mention that I didn't throw in at the beginning that I usually try to add, and just to be absolutely, you know, upfront and clear about it, the foundation does not actually dictate what PHP is going to do. PHP is still a completely independent sort of open source project. Things get voted on, and I can tell you that the PHP project is working on some changes to our voting system to make them a little bit more transparent about why people are making votes. There's a RFC in voting right now to add an abstention vote to every vote. So, you know, somebody's at least looked at it and said, I choose not to have an opinion rather than ignored it. And we'd like to get, you know, like I said, reason for vote as a field that you can add in so that we can understand maybe why something didn't pass or why it did pass for your obvious concerns. But yeah, so the project itself is still completely independent. It depends on votes. It depends on people who are actually building it day to day. Or have legacy voting karma for reasons. But the foundation does exist to, like I said, fund the developers who are working on it, many of whom have votes anyway, because they earned them the old-fashioned way, to sort of like combine feedback from frameworks so that framework interoperability group, that's what I couldn't remember earlier, the ones who make the PSRs, sorry, to combine opinions from framework to direct, you know, not, you know, dictate, but to at least help direct where PHP is going to go next. And, you know, just act as a gentle guiding force rather than, you know, somebody who's got their hands on the reins directly, because that is still the project and shall always be, if I have anything to say about it. Oh, that's another one that's interesting. Ben Ramsey, I think he actually already passed it. He went to every single official license holder, because there is a formal organization called the PHP Group that's made up of a bunch of people who were involved in the project in the 90s, who just kind of became the official owners of PHP. And he tracked every single one of them down, most of whom haven't been involved in PHP in a while. And he got authorization from every single one of them that we're actually able now to update the PHP license to be something that is a little bit more adaptive to the fact that people come in and go out of project over time. And, you know, we don't have to worry about weird license issues, you know, if somebody passes on. I'm 50 already, you know, I've got some years left, but I don't have that many years. You know, we have to think about things for the good of the project. So
Ben was on the other podcast a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, talking about that RFC and the value behind it. And yeah, the fact that it isn't just, you know, a finicky little change on a contract. It makes a big difference for some people.
Yeah, it makes a difference, particularly if you're dealing with companies who want to be like, we want to know what we're working with. We want to know where this is coming from. We actually got a request on some, we got a CISA request, CISA. The government wants to know how you're doing your secure development and your processing. And I ended up having to respond to that because, well, I said the government, the U.S. government. There are other governments. But I ended up responding to that one to be like, yeah, no, it's cool, dude. Open source projects are exempt from this. Read your own contract. But, you know, we still have to, these are still things that, like, at the project level, we have to think about. You know, it's not just writing code that runs code. It's a bunch of boring stuff that comes with it.
But you call it boring stuff. It's the stuff that keeps the language alive.
It is stuff that keeps the language alive. Well, I mean, as an engineer, it's kind of boring, but it is essential, yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for all that. Now, you're quite often in our Discord channel, and I'm going to see if I can put it on the screen and see if that works. Yes. Sorry, I was making that whilst we were talking. So if anyone listening can reach out to you, you're quite happy to answer questions in there. You're in there quite a lot. And there's a lot of other amazing people in our Discord. So if you're not in the Discord, why not? You should be there. Get over into our
every
Discord.
Name I dropped in this is in there. And even more. Larry might not be in that one. I know he's in the PHPC Discord, which I should probably know the invite URL for, but I don't. But if you ask it there, I'll get it to you.
Yeah.
So, or we can put it in the show notes.
We can put that in the show notes. We're going to have to watch the whole thing to remember what we've now promised to put in the show notes, because I've not been making notes of what we're putting in the show notes. But yeah, no.
I mean, you haven't been sitting there with a pen.
I mean, good news, there's a recording of it. So
yeah,
I mean, this is how.
Yeah, I have been sitting there with a pen, but I've not been doing anything with it. I've just been twiddling it in my fingers out of shot. So yeah, no, thank you. Thank you very much. That's been very helpful, very insightful. And I'm hoping that we keep moving forward and progressing in that way. I'm afraid my dog is now at my heels trying to ask for her dinner. So we're running a bit long. So I think we'll say goodbye there, and we will see you all in 2 weeks' time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me on, and good luck with the new show.
Thank you. Bye.